Hello and welcome to our podcast. Now, we've got a special interview today because we're speaking to Bishop John Arnold, Auxiliary Bishop of Westminster, and also soon to be chair of CAFOD's Board of Trustees. CAFOD is the Church's aid and development agency. The topic today is the recent visit that Bishop John made to the Democratic Republic of Congo, also Rwanda and Kenya. So, tell us a little bit about your experiences, first of all, in Congo.
Well, it was quite a mixed experience in Congo, really, because there was quite a lot of good news. CAFOD's partners with some very good projects. But overall, I have to say, it's quite a depressing country because simply there's no security and no guaranteed peace around the place. And obviously people do live with a degree of fear all the time.
Is it what you expected? Or were you sort of either taken aback or surprised in some way when you got there?
Well, I think I was surprised because in most African countries where I've visited before, there's been quite a mix of prosperity and poverty. But in the Congo, really, I have to say there wasn't very much prosperity at all, particularly considering the immense wealth of natural resources that the Congo has.
Did you manage to get around the country? Because apparently that's quite difficult at the moment.
Yes, we were in three different cities, Kinshasa, the capital, we were in Bukavu and Goma, and they're either extremes of the country, and it is a vast country. We did, in fact, fly between Kinshasa and Goma, but we had a boat trip down one of the Great Lakes from Goma to Bukavu.
Tell me a bit about any relationship or ongoing relationship we have with the church in Congo. Was this a solidarity visit?
Yes, you could say it was solidarity. CAFOD has partners in the Congo and works very closely with the Congo Caritas and its various localised groups. And so we were there with our partners looking at the various projects that we assist in funding and directing. And so there was quite a variety in what we saw.
Did you get any notion of whether this is well received by the church in Congo? Do they want other bishops' conferences and other members of the hierarchy to really just shine the light on what's going on in their country?
Oh, I think so. We were given a very warm welcome, I must say. And certainly people were very keen to tell us that the contacts with CAFOD are very important in the work that they do. They also was very keen, really, to feel that they have something of a voice through us outside the Congo. If anything, that they felt that there seemed to be a bit of isolation, that so much is going on in the Congo in terms of the exploitation of natural resources, particularly by big foreign companies, and they wanted us in some way to be a voice for them outside the Congo, back here in Europe.
Well, it's been such, really, particularly in Congo since colonial times, hasn't it, with rubber and other various mineral resources. And that leads me on to the forthcoming elections. There have already been one set of elections back in 2006, I believe, and now we're on the threshold of another set of elections. You know, obviously economy, mineral wealth, it all comes into it. And I'm sure people are vying and jostling for position and wanting more power in a country as rich, if you like, in the mineral sense as Congo. What was the sort of view in the country ahead of those elections?
Well, I was quite surprised to find how much the members of the Bishops' Conference were speaking about the priority of the elections, that they felt that they'd gone very well in 2006, but that they couldn't be taken for granted this time, that the nation hasn't suddenly become mature in its understanding of democracy. So they're a very big campaign to educate people in their responsibilities in the upcoming elections, and that they were training up some 30,000 observers to make sure that the elections are properly held.
Now, you had a good week in Congo before you moved on to Rwanda and Kenya, which we will touch upon in a second. Did you actually sort of get down to grassroots level and sort of speak to people and, you know, see what's going on?
Yes, what we try and do on CAFOD trips when we're speaking to partners is to visit various groups that we're assisting with in partnership. And so we were meeting particularly with women's groups, the victims of sexual violence. And that was quite harrowing, the meetings where they would tell us of their experiences, which spoke so much of the insecurity and the lack of peace around the place. And we went to a monastery, a convent, where the nuns, living in a beautiful place but slightly outside the city, actually said that they didn't feel safe. And indeed, one of their sisters had been gunned down in the cloister the year before we were there. They just felt that these bandits could appear at any stage. So, yes, we did meet quite a lot of people who are directly affected by the lack of security. And that's always an important priority for us when we travel.
Well, we're also joined in the studio by Maurice McPartlin, who is the Bishops' Conference Special Representative for Church and Development. Now, Maurice, you went on this visit as well. Bishop John was mentioning lack of security and that obviously being a fundamental concern. I find myself quite surprised at that, but how tense, if you like, is it in the Congo at the moment?
There is a lot of tension. Certainly in Bukavu, I think they felt it more, that the bandits... And when they speak of bandits, they almost put inverted commas, because they never quite know whether these are people linked with the army just because they haven't been paid and out to get more, whether they are part of the old Rwandan faction who are still living in the forest and so on, and that they are very close. They can strike anywhere at any time. We heard of a couple of situations where they've basically taken over a village for a week or for several days and systematically have looted the village and have assaulted and raped often all of the women.
Now, yes, my naivety, no doubt, but you tend to think, well, why has nobody got a handle on that? Why are people actually technically not safe in their own villages and stuff? Will that change? Is there any way of either internationally or within the country sorting out that situation of a lack of security?
I think logistically it's almost an impossible problem. The area is so vast, the resources that are there, even the UN is not seen in a very good light, because it is felt that they are unable to protect the local population. The army is entrusted, so people do feel that there is little that seems to be able to be done.
Bishop John, in and amongst that situation, did you sort of have any uplifting moments, any little experiences, more joy-filled, as it were, being with the people in Congo?
Oh, I think there were some wonderful moments. Certainly the visit to the convent, that was delightful, but also to see the groups concerned with livelihood, where people have been taken out of poverty, really, and given a sense of their own dignity and learning trades that would support them and their families and give them an income which would give them a real freedom in the way that they were living. There was good news, but always there was the shadow of the lack of security. So whatever good was going on could be shattered by the arrival of one of these armed groups at any time.
The other lack of security that came out with the, for example, the women who were learning to sew and had set up their own business, was the lack of security or protection from tax collectors, as they're called, who turn up. So this is in the town. It's not outright violence, but it's this pressure that they have to pay something.
Why don't we move on now to Rwanda, another country that, for those that possibly haven't been there, will still be in the consciousness, really, because of the horrific genocide of 94. I certainly saw a few films on the subject, which may be works of fiction, but were, you know, based upon fact and absolutely horrific. I presume it's your first visit, Bishop John, to Rwanda.
It was, yes.
And how did you feel knowing about that backdrop of extreme violence?
Well, I'd read something about it, and of course I remember 1994 very clearly. I was in a parish, and for those 100 days we heard something about it on the news. But the reality of the genocide is still underwriting everything that's going on. There is this wonderful prosperity, a beautiful country, which is developing very fast indeed and very efficiently, and people really do seem to be benefiting in all sorts of ways. But wherever we went, there were people who had been personally affected by the genocide, which rocked the nation for 100 days and in which 1 in 7 of the population had been killed. It was there all the time.
And we were talking, weren't we, off mic, about the generational issues, in that some of those children are now young adults, and you know, missing generation.
That's right. And all the complications that come with young people who have grown up without the security of family, without parents, and now displaying all the problems associated with drug and alcohol abuse.
Maurice, was that your first trip to Rwanda or have you been before?
No, I started working for CAFOD in 1994 as part of CAFOD's response to the genocide, which was funded by unasked for donations from the parishes of England and Wales. Some £6 million was donated. So for me, it has been seeing this, what Bishop John is saying, a country that was torn apart, that was bullet scarred, buildings had bullet holes in them, etc., etc. And every visit, seeing this progression of repairs, tidying up, of a structure being put in place, but at the same time being aware that underlying it, as Bishop John said, there is the effect of the genocide. Children born after the genocide are also traumatized by the genocide that they didn't live through.
Well, you'd be the perfect person to talk to in terms of assessing, you know, from 1994 to now. What sort of a country do you see now, bearing in mind that horrific context, really?
Well, as Bishop John says, it is miraculous, the change that has happened. He also noticed it stepping over the border, as it were, from the Congo into Rwanda. The contrast is incredible in terms of the general organization, the tidiness, the obvious care that is taken about the infrastructure and so on. So, yes, it's quite incredible.
Bishop John, tell me a little bit about the Catholic Church in both Congo and Rwanda, although I'm sure it differs. But does the Church have a voice in those countries?
Yes, I think both nations would, I think, regard themselves as very religious people. And the churches were packed and they were numerous. And I think the Church can claim to have a voice. Certainly, the bishops' conferences in both countries had agendas which spoke to national political issues as well. Without being political in themselves, they were very concerned about the priorities of development and the well-being of people. So there was a voice, and it was constructive and certainly very well organized in Rwanda, if not perhaps so organized in the Congo.
Well, you also visited Kenya. Tell us a little bit about your experiences in Kenya.
There was an extraordinary contrast. Half the country is green, fertile, producing vast amounts of foods and flowers that were being flown out by the day to British supermarket chains and all the rest of it. And then suddenly there was this line that took us into this dust bowl, which was the drought region. And the two were so separate in that it seemed almost as if half of Kenya didn't know about the disaster in the other half of their own country.
And obviously we talked about you being the incoming chair of the CAFOD trustees. CAFOD's campaigning, I believe, at the moment with regard to the East Africa drought. So it's important that people in this country keep that in their consciousness, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. And there's been some wonderful media coverage of the big refugee camps in the north of Kenya. But we mustn't forget about that vast area of Kenya where the semi-nomadic peoples live, the pastoral tribes, because they're really struggling for existence and they amount to a very large proportion of the population.
Now, Maurice, you've worked for CAFOD and you're very well versed in this particular region. Again, what sort of impact are we looking at from a natural disaster here in terms of the drought?
People are saying that they've never seen anything like it. I think within that region, people used to talk about expecting a drought once every 5 years. They've just had 3 years on the trot, so nothing for 3 years. It was very moving. One, as Bishop John was saying, that in the news, or even one of the CAFOD staff that came with us was talking about his mother's potato crop in the Rift Valley that she couldn't sell for anything, and yet not so far away, there were people who had no food. And then on the other hand, listening to people saying things like, we are competing with the baboons for natural fruits off the trees in order to eat. If the baboons have passed before us, then we don't eat.
Is it fair to say Bishop John, that in the three countries you've seen examples of great prosperity or prosperity alongside sort of abject poverty.
Yes, I think that's true, because even though the prosperity in the Congo is not so evident in terms of the suburbs of Kinshasa, there is clearly a great wealth in that nation, but I think it's been plundered, really, and they're not seeing the benefits of it themselves. But certainly in Rwanda, great prosperity there, but all the sadness and the memories of the genocide. And in Kenya, both things working so closely together, within the space of even half an hour, we'd moved from the rich cultivation around Mount Kenya into this dust bowl of the drought.
Well, I mean, I must say, what a visit. You've had 2 weeks and you've gone into countries that have been, well, scarred, really, from interference, you could say, treatment of one another, lack of humanity, and I'm sure a great number of examples, positive examples of human dignity and humanity in and amongst that. What would be your abiding memories, finally, from that trip?
For me, one of the very important memories was the dignity of the people we met in the drought region, the Turkana people, who showed us great hospitality, although they were living in dreadful conditions with very little hope at the moment that they would be able to survive in their own homes. But such dignity and friendship and warmth of welcome.
Well, I'm sure that there'll be an ongoing relationship between the church in those countries and our own Bishops' Conference here. Thank you both ever so much, and we'll look forward to getting an update on that further down the line.
Thank you.
If you want more from the Catholic Church in England and Wales, visit www.catholicchurch.org.uk, and for more from the Church's aid and development agency, CAFOD, visit cafod.org.uk.